You've been troubled. You've been broke. You've been hungry. No job, no money. The one you love has deserted you. That makes you blue.
Got the blues? Just want to hear some blues? Tune in every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5 for Code Blue. Right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, www.citr.ca. Code Blue.
Here's how he feels about it. Blues ain't nothing but a man. Good man feeling bad, no how. That's all that is.
You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR. Sexy in Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. What is sexy in Van City? I don't know. I think you're going to have to tune in. Yeah! Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners, but however you've decided to spend this hour with us, we're very, very, very glad to have you. Tonight, as always, we like talking about sexy things, and this time we're talking about a lot of sexiness, a lot of sass, and for a really, really awesome good cause. Tonight, I have a very special guest, Ms. Annie Temple. Welcome to the show, Annie.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So next week, I'm really excited because you've got next Wednesday, actually, to be exact, right before my show it starts, you've got the 7th annual Exotic Dancers for Cancer, which is going to be on at the Cecil Hotel.
Yep.
Yeah, so how did this event start?
Well, 7 years ago, a very good close friend of mine named Jocelyn, she found out that she was terminal with cancer. The funny thing was, is Jocelyn and I were neighbors. We got really close, and when we got to know each other, she shared with me that she had formerly been an exotic dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really funny because I had formerly been an exotic dancer. And so we kind of giggled, and it turned out that we knew a lot of similar people. So when Jocelyn found out that she was terminal, she started with breast cancer about 5 years before that, and
wow.
Then it kind of just spread and turned into other kinds of cancer 5 years later. And when that happened, she was going through a lot of you know, like depression and fear, and it was really difficult as a friend to watch her go through that.
Mm-hmm.
And with her 40th birthday approaching, and possibly her last birthday that she'd ever get to celebrate, I, along with other community members from The Naked Truth, which is an online resource and advocacy website for adult entertainers.
Which I'm looking forward to hearing more about that later. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, well, we were a really strong community, and when I turned to them in my pain of wishing that I could do something to help my friend, they all rallied around me, and we decided to hold a fundraiser for her as a kind of special birthday party as well. And that was the beginning of Exotic Dancers for Cancer.
Which is awesome. And how much, do you remember how much you raised the first year?
Yes, the first year we raised around $3,000. And we purchased Jocelyn a scooter because at the time she was having a lot of trouble getting around.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And is Jocelyn still around now, or has she passed
no,
on?
No, she passed away later, only a few months later.
I'm so sorry.
And so it was her last birthday that she got to celebrate, but she still is, she lives on through this event.
Mm-hmm.
And actually at the very first Exotic Dancers for Cancer, she expressed gratitude. She gave a speech on stage, an impromptu speech, which is so Jocelyn, if you knew her. And she thanked everyone for making her like Elvis, she said, and making her immortal through this event. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So it's evolved a lot in the last 7 years. What would you say the biggest changes have been for you personally as you've watched the event grow?
For me?
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question. I think it's interesting because every single year it's approaching time to plan Exotic Dancers for Cancer, and every single year around that time something happens to remind me of Jocelyn. I'll dream about her, or this year my daughter put in a video, a home movie that just happened to be when Jocelyn and I were both baptized together. And so just things will come up that will, you know, that will be like a sign to me that Jocelyn's
still
watching over me and still approving of what I'm doing in her name and in her honor.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah, she's an amazing woman, and it doesn't surprise me at all that she's able to, you know, reach out with her spirit from another world.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's great. So since she's passed on, I know you've been giving the money to Rethink Breast Cancer. How have you actually gotten to meet some of the women that it's actually affected, the monies that you've raised over the years?
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, we began the very first fundraiser raising the money for Jocelyn in particular.
Mm-hmm.
The following year, we had trouble finding a charity that would accept our donation. Everyone was willing to accept it anonymously, but nobody wanted to be the charity that was named in our promotions. And so that was something that I had discussed with Jocelyn before she died, and we had agreed that we would only want to give the money to an organization that was not ashamed to accept money from exotic dancers. And so the first organization that we found that was willing to accept our money and do it publicly was the St. James Community Services Society in Vancouver. However, they weren't cancer specific. So the following year, I was really trying to find like an organization that was cancer specific. And I wrote a heartfelt letter to the Breast Cancer Society of Canada, and they actually decided to accept our donation. It was just amazing. And so then after that, we were so proud of ourselves. We thought, you know, the stigma against strippers is declining. We've got this big, reputable cancer organization willing to accept our donation. You know, it was a real boost for us as an industry and as a community. However, the following year, when we wanted to give them our donation again, they declined the donation. Apparently, the year previous, when they had accepted it, they had received a lot of criticism from their major donors. And so they were concerned that they would lose some of their major donors if they accepted our somewhat smaller donation. So,
I'm sorry about that. I know in terms of as a charity, in terms of just trying to meet your mission however you need to, but it just strikes me as way too much like Gone with the Wind, actually. I don't know if you've ever seen that scene where nobody will take from Belle Watling, the woman who has, you know, who has the house and everything like that.
I saw that scene. I read the
book. Did you read the book too? I love the book.
I love the book too. And that totally, I felt one with that woman in that moment. It was amazing. Yes, but I mean, I think every single movie that I watch and every book that I read, I'm always watching the portrayal of the sex industry worker and how the author, you know, chooses to portray that person. It's very interesting to me.
It is interesting. And how in Vancouver do you think it's changed just over the last 7 years? Like with things like there's more of a third wave of feminism in terms of the burlesque movement. You've got pole dancing classes. And there's, so it's just a little bit, I'd like to think it's more open, but what are your thoughts?
I agree with you. I think that the hard work of my colleagues and people that are in the sex worker movement that are attempting to, you know, create an industry that's healthy and safe and not stigmatized to the point where we're actually seeing people murdered because of it. You know, that I think that our hard work is paying off in small ways. We haven't changed the laws yet, but that will come. But we are changing public perception. We are challenging people to look at themselves and look at, you know, the people around them and the people they love and realize that sex is not evil.
No, it's not evil.
No.
What do you think in terms of with the burlesque movement? Becky Ross, who's one of the professors here at UBC, she did a book, and I'm just trying to remember the working title was Shake, Rattle, and Pole, which was about the sex industry in Vancouver, in particular dancers from the 1940s to the 1980s. And I'm just trying to remember what the actual title is, which any listeners out there, if you want to email me in at that would be wonderful, or give us a call at 604-822-2447. That would be great, because I'm trying to remember what the title of the book is. But one of the things Becky pointed out was sometimes, just as women, sometimes we tend to divide up in terms of sections where we segregate each other. And I know, for example, the first year I actually performed in the burlesque festival, for teaching pole dancing for fitness, where a lot of people, the first time I did it, they were a little bit uncomfortable with the pole. So I was just wondering in terms of how that's evolved, because you've got burlesque dancers now, which I think is fantastic that it's open.
Yes, there definitely has been an evolution. The burlesque dancers and exotic dancers did start out as burlesque became popular again. There was a bit of a divide between the two types of striptease, really. I mean, burlesque dancers don't get completely naked. A lot of burlesque dancers like to differentiate themselves from exotic dancers, and that is the same goes with a lot of pole dancers.
Mm-hmm.
They want to differentiate themselves from exotic dancers, and that always comes back to the whore stigma. You know, nobody wants to be the whore. So if you're a pole dancer, you don't want to be confused with a stripper. If you're a stripper, you don't want to be confused with a hooker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a hooker, you don't want to be confused with the drug-addicted, street-based sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's this hierarchy, and really what ends up happening is we're oppressing each other in our effort to prove that we're better than the other. And really, it's just an internalization of this oppression that's been put on us by, you know, greater society, just with the attitude that sex is evil. And I'm sure that you get this topic a lot on your radio show.
Sometimes I do, but the other thing I was going to say is perhaps I'm wondering if it might be also for a very long time, if you go way, way back in the caveman days where they used to club us on the head and drag us back to the cave by the hair, throw us over the shoulder and all that, which actually is kind of hot. But in regards to that, we're always in competition with each other as women, where sometimes it was like, well, my father has more land than yours, that kind of thing. And so on some weird level where it comes down to where we're trying to prove that we're better than the other, but it's almost, even though now we don't necessarily need land, even though a condo would be great for it to have somebody want to marry us, it's just that thing.
It's primal.
Yeah, it's very primal.
I do agree with you. I think that, you know, I recently became single, and it's funny because there's like this primal instinct to find a mate,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I have a panic attack at the thought of finding a mate right now because I'm only very recently single. However, I still have that primal instinct when I meet men where I'm looking at them for qualities that I would look for in a mate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I catch myself and I'm like, you don't want a mate. But it still is that primal instinct. And I think that that's what a lot of people don't realize about men as well, when we're shaming men and we're stigmatizing male sexuality. And people don't like to talk about that. You know, people are very quick to point out how women are oppressed. And I agree. I'm a strong feminist. I do believe that, you know, women are more likely to be poor, and women are more likely to go into debt, and women are more likely to have issues related to simply the fact that they're women. So yes, I do agree with that, but I also feel that, you know, that tables have turned somewhat, and that there is an oppression of our men in our society going on as well. And, you know, we're oppressing them sexually, and as an exotic dancer who is willing to say that out loud and say that publicly, mm-hmm. I get criticized a lot. And one of the main criticisms I hear is, well, you're catering to male sexuality. And I just wonder, well, what is female sexuality? Mm-hmm. If I feel sexy when I'm doing it, is that not female sexuality? I'm kind of confused.
I think in terms of female sexuality, I think that's a very, very valid point. I think whatever makes you feel good.
Yeah, you would think
so. Important.
Yeah.
And again, I think sometimes it comes back to the confidence thing. And this is going to sound like a really weird twist, but this year there was a Building Bridges conference at BC Women's Hospital, and it had the service providers about women dealing with violence, mm-hmm. sexual violence as well. They also had addiction issues as well as the shelters. And one of the things that everybody at the conference agreed was that next time we'd all bring a male colleague to the event, because it was really important to make men part of the solution.
That is an excellent, excellent thing. I love to hear that. And that's a similar experience I had recently when a feminist group was forming in Vancouver, and the question was raised of whether men would be accepted onto this feminist coalition of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a strong supporter of the notion of having men join. Men are feminists too. I mean, you need only believe that women should have equal rights as men to be considered a feminist. And so how could we, you know, exclude all these men who believe that? I mean, if they have any sense, they should.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And sometimes I think in terms of male sexuality as well, there's not as much support out there for guys as mm-hmm. there are for women. The stats for women, I know for Aboriginal women, it's 1 in 3 women have dealt with sexual violence before the age of 18, which is pretty high. And I believe it's 1 in 5, according to Amnesty International, for women. And for men, I'm not quite sure what the stats are. I'm going to have to find that out for a future show. But I do believe it's probably higher than the stats tell us, because I think there's not a lot of support for men who have dealt with physical or sexual violence.
Yeah, and so they don't share their stories, mm-hmm. and so we never hear about them. And that is another thing. You know, I always thought the most oppressed person in our society is likely a street-based sex worker.
No.
But then I met the male street-based sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
And how much harder is it for a man to admit that he is having sex for money, especially with other men,
mm-hmm.
than it is for a woman, you know? And so, you know, then you can, I mean, as I get older, I keep learning of more and more different groups that are marginalized, and so I don't feel like we're just the only one out there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely, I think that, you know, men are definitely a group that people need to take a look at. We can open up all the safe shelters we want in the world for women who are abused, but they're not going to stop being abused until we have more programs and services for men.
I agree.
Yeah.
I really agree.
Mm-hmm.
For some of the guys who want to come out to support women in terms of the show, and I am going to ask this question, which may sound weird. I know, and I applaud you in terms of for raising money in terms of breast cancer. But at any time, because I know you said that the show is always Exotic Dancers for Cancer. Would you ever consider doing it for prostate cancer? Or
Yeah, actually, we did do a prostate cancer fundraiser last year. We did one in August at Mugs and Jugs in Surrey. So we raised money for prostate cancer at that particular event, and we are doing it again in June. And this time it's going to be in Victoria. We have an Exotic Dancers for Cancer sister event in Victoria every year.
Oh, that's great.
And this year it will also be for a prostate cancer organization that's on Vancouver Island. And we're really excited about that. We really want our male paying customers to understand that we appreciate their business. We care about them. We do not feel exploited by them. We don't consider them to be depraved perverts. You know, it's a business. It's an exchange. We like our jobs. You know, so we really want to let, and let just even the men in our lives know, like, we care about you too.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just about saving beautiful breasts everywhere.
Although breasts are very important.
Yes, they are.
And they are very beautiful.
Definitely. We have recently had a potential sponsor contact us, and he's part of a company that creates prosthetic breasts. Yes.
Wow.
I know, and it's unfortunate because we're only a week away from the event, and I'm not sure how we could really incorporate something to do with that into our event, or how we could really work together with this particular individual. But he seems really willing and excited to figure something out with us, so we're going to look at that for future.
I think that sounds fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I'm trying to think if you can do that with an auction or something like that.
Yeah,
while
I know.
I know.
We're all coming up with ideas. You know,
really,
he says that he could take, you know, for instance, if we were to organize it in advance, we could get a bunch of women and have their breasts. What is the word? I guess where he gets the little.
Or we can
imprint,
do the molds.
The
and
mold, yeah, and then it takes about 4 hours to make the actual prosthesis. I don't know if I said that right.
I'm not sure if you did either, but I'm not sure how to pronounce it properly. So, but I think that'd be a fantastic idea, and I think that would probably go over really, really well.
Yeah, we'd probably sell a lot, hey?
I think you would. I think you could probably take that one step further with certain people and possibly actually have the cast where you could actually make it almost like cookies, possibly, where you could actually make them out of that shape, too.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe we could invite women around Vancouver who only have one breast to come down and get a free breast and raise money somehow through that.
That'd be amazing.
That would be cool, hey?
That'd be really, really amazing. I love how we're brainstorming on the show.
Let's do that next year.
I think so. Let's do it. Actually, I was actually thinking if you get somebody like Sarah McLachlan actually down and actually painting one of the out of the casts of the breasts or the prosthesis.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah, and then
do
auctioning that off.
Do you think we could get a mainstream celebrity like Sarah McLachlan to take the risk of being associated with a bunch of sex workers?
You never know. Actually, well, Oprah's had pole dancing on her show, and that was a long time ago before it hit mainstream, so.
That's true.
So you never know, so.
She's also shamed sex workers on her show before.
Oh, okay.
But I understand that, you know, it's the ignorance, it's the it's the conditioning. We all have that conditioning, and until we educate ourselves or, you know, make the effort to even learn about the industry, and if there's no reason to, then why would we ever?
So I'm going to go back full circle. Imagine that you had full power. You are a fairy godmother, and you could change the educational system in the schools. What would you like to educate kids in terms of sexuality early that you feel that would be necessary to change this?
Oh, that is such a good one. Well, I would want little girls to learn to value their sexuality more. And so it wouldn't be abstinence-based. It would be like, here is the information to educate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you decide to do, because if you're old enough to make the decision, then you're old enough to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And here are the tools to make the right decisions. You know, and I think that the abstinence approach is, you know, well, first of all, it doesn't work at all. I mean, I was a teenager. I had sex as a teenager. I don't really know very many. I don't think I know anyone who didn't.
I didn't until after I graduated from high school.
Okay,
but
I know one person.
But I was a weird case.
But, you know, actually, I met another woman who said the same thing. She waited. And the reason she waited is because her mother had told her that, you know, her mother had basically taught her to value her sexuality and had taught her not to give up the sex card. You know?
Yes, my mother used to always say, don't, you know, why buy a cow if you can get the milk for free?
And it's kind of true, you know, because when you hold on to the sex card, you have a whole lot more power.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you don't think about it that much after you become an adult and you become, like, regularly sexually active. It becomes almost normal just to have sex if you feel like having sex. You know, it's very different to get to know people first, you know?
In other words, what you're saying is it's all about the tease. So if people are coming to the event on next Wednesday at the Cecil for the 7th Annual Exotic Dancers for Cancer, that if there's one thing they should learn about, it's definitely about the tease. And that it can, and I agree with you, it's very, very, very important, whether or not it's through tantric, where you learn to connect with somebody and actually establish intimacy as opposed to just genital friction when, you know, I mean, we all have our needs, but, you know, there's something to say about the value. And I was going to say full circle in terms of about this, about you being newly single. I don't see that as a bad thing, even if you're not ready to date at this stage, to always be looking in terms of seeing what you'd like in terms of a mate, because I think that's really important. I think it's basically genetic and biological.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's normal, and instead of going, oh, I shouldn't be doing that, because it's like it just is, and just trusting yourself that you know.
Yes, that is true. You have to trust yourself. As a woman especially, you have to trust your intuition, because that is actually where our power lies.
It really is. It is the magic gift.
It is, and even when we're teaching women about, you know, violence and how to work safely and that kind of thing, I mean, the most important advice is always to trust your gut, because your gut will tell you.
It's so true.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to take a really tiny short break, and when we get back, oh, I forgot to say, at the very top of the show, we had the song Striptease by Hoxley Workman, and I'm going to play a little bit of the Wet Spots on the break, and you are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR, and when we come back, Annie Temple is going to be chatting to me a little bit more, and we're going to talk about the Adult Entertainment Awards and about the Naked Truth, which I think is very, very exciting, and a little bit more about breast cancer, too. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM CITR. We will be right back.
And you've heard of Baudelaire, and we both agree that human rights abuses are unfair. You understand your feelings, and you're not afraid to share, and I think I could do something with your hair. You smell nice, and you're groovy, and we both like foreign movies. My mother says you have that touch of class. Well, I can see a shining future where we'll dialogue and nurture. But there's one last thing I feel I need to ask. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? 'Cause you're beautiful and curvy, but unless you're kind of pervy, there's no way you and me are gonna last. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? When it comes to brains, you've got them, but unless you play the bottom, I'm afraid I'm gonna have to take a pass. Well, you're adorable, reliable, but is your anus pliable? That's the information that I need. Well, you would do it if you love me. If you're nervous, what about me? You'll be able to depth and speed. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? 'Cause I've ordered in a shipment of the relevant equipment. I've got lubricant and poppers and some brass. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? On this type of penetration, we can always take a correspondence class. You see, I'm not the kind of fella who can get up on vanilla. No, I need a little color in my sex. Well, honey pie, it just so happens that I brought my Day-Glo strap on and some mescaline to heighten the effect.
Ready?
Do you take it in the air? Take it in the ass. Ooh, do you take it in the ass?
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the helpline is one of many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The helpline number is 604-696-4666. Or contact us online at www.aidsvancouver.org.
And we are back at Sexy and Van... Ooh.
Sorry about that.
I hear a phone. What was that?
I think somebody's listening to the show and wanted to text message me.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm glad they're listening to the show. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, for those listeners out there, we are listening to a little bit of Wet Spots, Do You Take It in the Ass? So, which I thought would be very entertaining and very appropriate, and they are local, which is always good.
Okay, don't ask me that question.
Don't. I'll just note that you've said no comment on that question.
Thank you.
And if you're just joining us now, you've been listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And I'm talking to Ms. Annie Temple, and we've been chatting about the 7th Annual Exotic Dancers for Cancer, which is coming up this Wednesday coming up, so not tonight, but next week. So before you come listen to the show, you should come check out their event, because they're going to have all sorts of really cool things going on. And it's for a really good cause. It's going to rethink breast cancer. And before the break, we're just mentioning that it's important, and it's very important, especially for this event, to support different types of cancer, whether they be male or female. And this, it's going to rethink breast cancer. And just some fun farm facts, which apparently one out of nine women will develop breast cancer during her lifetime, and one in 20 each will die of it. So hopefully we can change that. So with all the monies raised, and I think the prosthetic breasts that we were talking about beforehand, where you might get that contributor to it, I think that could be really cool.
Yeah, I agree.
So we'll have to figure that out for next year, which I think would be awesome. Yeah, so the other thing I wanted to talk about is, tell me about the Naked Truth. You'd started a little bit, and I cut you off in the first half.
Oh, so the Naked Truth is it's a website I started in 2000. And I originally started it as kind of like a resource website for exotic dancers, where they could go on, share information about where they're working, give information, ask questions, support each other. It can be very isolating to be a worker in the adult entertainment industry, because you may be hiding your work from your family or your friends, or your partner might be a little bit jealous if you talk about it. And so a lot of the time, you know, adult entertainers like exotic dancers and whatnot, they have no one to talk to when they really need to talk. And so that was one of the bigger reasons why I wanted to start the site.
And I like the fact it's on a website as well, so it's even though it's using a more modern medium in terms of that, and especially back in 2002, where people could still be anonymous if they wanted to be, but it was a way of bridging that isolation that sometimes women deal with.
Oh, for sure. And when the site first started, there weren't nearly as many dancers or adult entertainers accessing internet, even. I mean, it was 10 years ago, and even in the last 10 years, it's just, yeah, it's blossomed, and including the website. And it was originally just started for exotic dancers, because at that time I was an exotic dancer and I didn't really have the vision of starting something bigger than that. Over the last 10 years, I got involved in a lot of sex worker activism, and I became friends, very close friends actually, with many different people from the sex industry. You know, my best friend is a dominatrix in Hamilton, Ontario. Another very close friend of mine is an escort in Vancouver. I'm part of a coalition and have become close friends with a number of people from webcam, male sex work. We have a transgender woman a part of the coalition. So making friends with people from all these different aspects of the industry really inspired me. And so when I had an opportunity about a year and a half ago, I switched the site over and expanded it to include all what I call adult entertainers. And that would be, you know, anyone in the sex industry, basically, that's doing sex work. And so sex work, when I refer to sex work, I don't necessarily mean having sex for money. You know, exotic dancers don't have sex for money. Webcam girls generally do not have sex for money. Adult film stars often only have sex with one partner, or only females, or, you know, they have different, you know, boundaries. Dominatrices don't usually have sex for money. Escorts, they do. And so even though I say sex work, I'm referring just to people who work in an industry that is considered the sex industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the site went and got switched over, I was really impressed and amazed with how many new members signed up. And the site is just growing like crazy. We're getting close to 2,000 members, and
wow,
it's only been live for just over a year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you getting male as well as female?
Yes, we're getting male, female, transgender. We have a little person that is an adult
person.
Yeah, that is an adult entertainer who's a part of the website. I love it. It's great. You know, everyone that is involved in this industry, whether it's in fetish work, domination, submission, escort, exotic dance, everyone is welcome. The only real requirement is to have a liberal attitude, be non-judgmental, and and accepting of the other people in the industry. And that is difficult, like we were talking earlier about the hierarchy. Yeah, you know, that is hard, but I think that the Naked Truth is helping to bridge those gaps, and it's helping people to accept themselves even more, mm-hmm. and realize that they don't have to internalize that shame that's imposed upon them by society. You know, you don't have to feel bad for what you do. You're not doing a bad thing. Sex mm-hmm. is not evil. You know, male sexuality is not a demon. You know, it's actually a natural, you know, way of being, way of living. Women, we have our natural attributes as well. We're naturally nurturing. We're naturally beautiful. We're naturally sexy. Jeez, we've got the best end of the deal, in my opinion.
Yes, I think so, too. It's very true.
And it's fun.
I think it is, too.
So why not embrace our power?
I think so, too. And I think it's really cool that you're doing these awards. So is this the first year for the Adult Entertainment Awards?
Yes, it is. I'm so excited.
So yeah, that way you'll be able to celebrate more in terms of people.
Mm-hmm. So the Adult Entertainment Awards were started as a way to unite our community as adult entertainers across the board. That was part of it. But even more than that, it was to celebrate all of the positive aspects of our industry and the ethical, you know, exemplary members of our industry that never get any kind of credit for their hard work or their work ethic. You know, adult industry is just kind of, as we were talking, stigmatized. It's, mm-hmm. it's villainized. It's criminalized, you know. Escort businesses, massage parlors, strip clubs, they're getting random enforcement actions against them, and oftentimes they are just simply running a legitimate business, you know, a safe, healthy, you know, workspace for people. And when these businesses are threatened, and especially when they're closed, that makes people desperate. And so then you have people who are, say, doing one form of sex industry work who have their boundaries set, and then they feel pressured to, you know,
change
their boundaries a little. You know, and like, I can speak for myself. I, as an exotic dancer, I get offered to, you know, be set up all the time by men who, you know, want one girl to be, you know, go home with them, you know, a couple times a week or whatever it is. Or, you know, or I'll have offers for sex for money. Mm-hmm. Me personally, that's crossing a boundary for me. And I'm very honest about that. You know, years ago when I was dancing before, and before I became more open-minded and, you know, learned more about the industry and about myself and about the other people that are in the industry, I would be very offended when men would offer me money for sex in the strip club. I'd be like, I'm a stripper, not a hooker. I'd be making way more money if I was a hooker. You know, but now I'm not so offended, because I actually have realized, as I've done this activism work for a longer period of time, that there's a lot more crossover than we realize between the different parts of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, now if a man, you know, propositions me, I recommend him to one of my girlfriends who is an escort, you know, and I tell him that that's not where my boundaries exist personally. And I'm not offended, you know. And it's the same thing when they offer me drugs. I'm not offended. I just don't do drugs.
And I love that you're not afraid to say that.
And it's, you know, really working in the bar, yeah, and working in the bar industry, I think anyone who works in the bar industry is faced with that all the time, because people are, you know, doing, you know, drinking and whatnot and getting into substances, so they're going to offer you substances. But the funniest thing is, you know, almost every, well, I don't know if almost every, but I would say by far the majority of adult entertainers that I've met, or sex industry workers that I've met from all the different parts of the industry, do not abuse drugs. And so that is just yet another stereotype, you know?
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that stereotype exists?
I believe that it's part of that villainizing, you know? It happened, for instance, when I first became an exotic dancer and I told my mother, and she said, I don't know you anymore. You must be on drugs. You know, and that was her first assumption. She assumed immediately that the only way that a woman could bear her body to music, you know, on stage in front of multiple men, she had to be on drugs. And she couldn't fathom that, you know, I might actually enjoy my job. I might like being a performer. I might like wearing, you know, sequins.
And some of those costumes are pretty beautiful.
Yes, and totally. And, you know, and it's not just about that. I mean, I loved doing a floor show. I loved being sensual. I loved being funny on stage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dancing again now. I keep talking in the past tense because I was retired for so long, but I just came back to dancing, and I love it. I love being in the club with the music playing all day, and, you know, the customers, 90% of customers, if not more, are gentlemen, and they are very, you know, very nice and very supportive, and that's like what we were talking about earlier, about engaging men in, you know, being part of the solution of the ills of society, and in this case, engaging men in helping us decrease the stigma of the sex industry, and it helps them because then it destigmatizes them and their mm-hmm. their purchasing of the sex industry. You know,
what's the biggest thing you've learned from exotic dancing?
The biggest thing I've
yeah.
learned? No one has ever asked me that question.
I've been doing that a lot tonight, haven't I?
Yeah, no, that's great. But the first thing that came to my mind when you said that, the biggest thing,
mm-hmm.
I would have to say the biggest thing that I learned from exotic dancing was not to hate men. Which is so funny because I do believe that being in this industry can sometimes make you hate men. You know, there are that few who are just so vulgar and so rude and so disrespectful, and it hurts so much,
mm-hmm.
and you take that home with you, you know, and if it happens often enough in a month, it can start to really make you jaded, and burnout, you know, all of that together can really make you kind of have like a disdain towards your customer, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that happens in almost any industry. You can develop a disdain for your customer. But in my case, I entered the industry when I was going through a really tough time and had a very low opinion of men at the time. I was a young girl. And, well, a young girl, 23. Young girl
it's
to me.
It's still young.
And then what ended up happening is I just met a lot of wonderful men that I still consider friends. I'm friends with many of the customers that I made in my first year or two of dancing.
Hmm.
You know, and I've met a lot of men that come into the clubs and they don't want to try and pick up the stripper. They want to be at home with their girlfriend
mm-hmm.
or their wife, and they feel dragged out, you know, and then the other guys who, they're there, they're having a good time, they're respectful, but they're in control of themselves. You know, there are, you know, men out there that that meet my expectations.
Which is very important. Why do you think guys go to strip clubs?
Oh, there are so many reasons. I think it really depends on the guy, but I think a lot of it is just to see beautiful women
hmm.
and, you know, be in that kind of that environment where it's not only okay to look at beautiful women, but if you don't, then people will think there's something wrong with you. And also, you know, I think for some guys, I think some men go into the clubs and this is not like your typical customer, but there are some that may not feel very confident or may not be very attractive or may have a disability or something that prevents them from being comfortable approaching women in another environment. But in a strip club environment, you know, we're approaching you
mm-hmm.
and we like you immediately. We will like you as long as you continue to be respectful to us. You know, if you tip us and buy dances, we'll like you even more. If you are rude to us, vulgar to us, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter how much money you pay us, we're not going to hang out. You know, and so I think that it's the great equalizer because men can come into a strip club and dancers will treat them, you know, they'll treat them well based on how they treat them in return. And it's not about, you know, how good looking you are or how much money you have necessarily, although, you know, we are there to make money, and so that is part of the exchange that's happening.
Mm-hmm. But
it's an open, honest environment, you know? Dancers have cellulite, they have zits on their asses, they have bodies of real women. You can't airbrush someone that's right in front of you in the flesh.
That's true, although you can make that light look so perfect, so you can't see the cellulite at certain angles.
That's true, but why don't any of the clubs do that?
That's a very good question.
There's always just that one light.
You know, Annie, I just thought of a way where you and I can get rich. We should start investing in lighting and having that for people's bedrooms.
Oh, that is a great idea. Can we do my bedroom first?
Followed by mine.
Okay.
When are the Naked Truth Awards?
And this is really easy to remember. If you can remember,
69.
It's the 6th month and the 9th day. So it's June 9th.
June 9th.
That's the day that we're probably going to hold it every year. So
okay.
That's the plan. This will be the very first year that we're doing it. Basically, a close girlfriend of mine and I came up with a ton of nomination categories.
Such as
in adult film, we have favorite porn bloopers, favorite pussy squirter, favorite male performer. So we have like performer, and then we also have things like coworkers, like favorite driver, favorite DJ, favorite strip club agent. Then we also have advocacy and activism categories. So favorite feminist advocate, favorite academic advocate, and these are people who are working to benefit the lives of sex industry workers. So we even have a category for clients. Only one client was nominated this year. This is our first year though, and he's a little uncomfortable to show his face to accept the award in person because of the stigma, and I understand, you know, if everyone at work finds out that he's the favorite strip club patron of the year, that could be a little embarrassing for him. You know, I do understand. I realize it is a risk for everyone that's coming out to accept their awards and to be, you know, exposed to, you know, the masses that attend the event, which it is looking like it will be very well attended.
Where are you having it?
It's going to be at the Rio Theater on the corner of Commercial and Broadway.
That seats quite a bit of people, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It seats 425 people.
Wow.
Yes, and I'm pretty sure we'll be packed to the rafters. There's going to be a multimedia aspect to the event. We'll be presenting originally designed trophies designed by an artist in town. You can find him at simplyartist.com, but he is just amazing. I visited his house a little while ago when we were talking about the trophies, and he has these incredible, like, I don't know, wooden sculptures, life-size wooden sculptures of women and naked women and naked men, and just amazing, amazing work around his house. So he's going to be helping with the trophies, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're having some world-class entertainers will be entertaining us, and Samantha Mack, who is actually one of our favorite people in the world because she is just amazing at hostessing, emceeing events is what I meant to say.
That's okay.
And she is emceeing actually both our Exotic Dances for Cancer event next week and the Adult Entertainment Awards.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, she's so great. She's so funny. She did a viral video for Exotic Dances for Cancer that's going around on Facebook. So if anyone sees it, share it. Help us spread the word.
So we've got the nakedtruth.ca, and for Exotic Dancers for Cancer, where can they find more information? You just mentioned Facebook. Is there a website that we can direct people to?
Yeah, well, the only website is nakedtruth.ca. We do have Facebook events, so we have, if you want to find the events on Facebook, 7th Annual Exotic Dancers for Cancer is the title of the event that's happening next Wednesday. And I believe the Naked Truth Adult Entertainment Awards, yeah, that would be the other one.
Nice. And what's next for you personally?
For me personally?
Mm-hmm.
kind of just going with the flow.
Okay.
Yeah. I want to see where the naked truth takes me. It's been like a ride. It's kind of just unfolded before me, and every time something amazing happens, I just try to accept it and go with it.
Which I think is the best thing to do in life. Sometimes we fight too much, and I think we miss the gems that are kind of there along the path.
Nothing I ever planned actually worked out the way I planned it. So I've kind of trying to give up on planning and just try to see what happens. You know, I know the world has something in store for me. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been doing all this work all this time.
Exactly. And it's just a matter of just trusting it.
Yes, and same with you.
Thank
and
you.
All your hard work. And we're part of, you know, a similar movement.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's actually weird because I didn't plan with Beauty Night, but it's interesting the way that worked, where I've been envisioning it since I was about 18 years old, and it wasn't until I was 28 where the opportunity came up, and it's been 9 years since, so it's been pretty full-on. We're going into our 10th year now, so it's
been... It sounds like the Naked Truth, how it just it started as an inspiration,
mm-hmm.
and it turned into something bigger than you ever thought it would. And it's just carried you along.
And it just keeps growing. But it's interesting in terms of the planning, because I think the trick is with planning is you plan it, but be ready to chuck it out the window, where it's almost like a grid, but it's not the actual building.
And exactly.
Knowing that it's just a blueprint is one thing to be aware of when it comes to plans.
And being able to let go of the things that don't work out and not take it on.
Yeah.
You know, and also, like, I experience this often where what you're really putting yourself out there in the media or just in any kind of public way, that you're going to receive some kind of, you know, negative feedback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're never going to be able to please all of the people all of the time, and there's always going to be people that don't agree with what you're doing. And the way that I always try to get through that is just to remember, well, what are my values? What do I believe in? And if I am sticking to that, then I can let go of what others are saying, because, you know, what really matters is what I think of myself.
And
if, you know, if you stand by your own values and what you believe to be true, then you can't go wrong.
No, and that's absolutely perfect.
And you're doing that too.
I am.
That's amazing. I love what you're doing with Beauty Night.
Thank you very much. It's been wonderful. I'm very, very lucky. So I've got some pretty amazing people too. So that just keeps...
Isn't it neat how that happens?
Yeah, I think life's like that. You just have to think thoughts. So in terms of planning, I guess to think of it as thinking it. And then you just open yourself up to it. And when you're ready, you will get it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You know, a few years ago, I was talking about starting a society, like a non-profit society out of the Naked Truth for exotic dancers. And that never ended up materializing, mostly because we couldn't coordinate dancers. Our schedules are so all over the map, it's just too difficult to coordinate everyone to be holding board meetings. But now, in retrospect, I realized that that was not the path I was meant to go. And so, you know, only 2 or 3 years later, here I am opening up the website and the community to so many more people than exotic dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny when you look back and see how everything really did work out the way it was supposed to.
The way it was meant to. And it's just a matter of just trusting it, even if it feels not so great at the time.
Oh, yes, I know that when you're stressing a week before an event.
Yes. Which, on that note, I'm looking forward to, where can people get tickets to this?
Okay, so for Exotic Dancers for Cancer or the Naked Truth Awards, you can get tickets through online by contacting me at annie@nakedtruth.ca. I can accept payments through PayPal. The other way is, for Exotic Dancers for Cancer, you can pay at the door. So it's $20 either way for Exotic Dancers for Cancer, which is next week. For June 9th, the Adult Entertainment Awards, it's $50 per ticket, but we decrease the amount if you buy more than one. So for two tickets, it's $90. And for three or more, it's only $40 per ticket.
So it's good to make sure you go as a threesome or a foursome.
Yes, definitely. And you'll be amazed. We're hoping and we're planning to have, you know, balloon genitals. Genital catering. No, everything is sex themed, so it will be a very tantalizing festivity.
I think it sounds really awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And I'm looking forward to checking it out next week at the Cecil, starting for the 7th Annual Exotic Dances for Cancer. And I'm going to have you back on before June so we can plug the other event for the adult entertainment for the Naked Truth.
I'd love to.
Because that will be really, really fun. And I know we'll have more things to talk about because this hour went by way too quickly.
It does when two girls get talking.
It definitely does. Well, listeners out there, you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Normally up next would be Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour, because he is a very sexy man to be miserable with, but he is not